Blog Talk Radio.
This is Chief for Yourself. Now, here's Gio.
Hi, and welcome to Chief for Yourself. Always great to have you with us wherever you happen to be in the world. Our purpose is to maintain good chi, or essential energy, while helping you toward living your genuine life. There's a word making its way through the Western world by way of popular media, the internet, and first-person accounts. The word is ayahuasca. Ayahuasca is a psychedelic brew from the Amazon rainforest. It's considered a medicine by many of its users. And our guest today has done extensive research into how this medicine has been used, and this includes her own experience. Dr. Rachel Harris has found that there's great therapeutic potential in ayahuasca, and we'll talk about some of her findings today. Rachel Harris is the author of Listening to Ayahuasca, New Hope for Depression, Addiction, PTSD, and Anxiety. Rachel, we call ayahuasca a psychedelic brew, and it sounds real mysterious. If you would break down the contents, tell us what ayahuasca is and how it's made.
Yes, absolutely. It's really a tea, and that should make sense to anybody who's brewed their own tea from tea leaves.
Mm-hmm.
It's a combination of two plants. One is actually the vine called ayahuasca, and the other plant is the leaves from the chacruna plant. And they're put together in a big pot with added water and boiled.
And the indigenous people say that they learned to make the ayahuasca brew when the plants told them how to do that. Now, I talk to my plants every time I water them, so that makes sense. That makes sense to me.
They haven't told you anything that critical?
They haven't really said anything that I really want to hear or anything for that
matter. Yeah, well, the anthropologist asked that, you know, how did you know to combine these two plants? Because they biochemically mix in a way that makes the active ingredient DMT, dimethyltryptamine, available in the human system. And so the anthropologist wondered, of all the plants available in the Amazon jungle, how did you know to combine those two? And so the indigenous people have a cosmology where they believe that there are plant spirits and plant teachers who communicate with them. And hence the name of the book, Listening to Ayahuasca. I've actually had the experience of hearing the voice of the spirit of ayahuasca. I'm stumbling a little bit because it's still difficult for me to talk about this. It's so outside my Western world view, but I literally heard a voice. And that's not my normal story.
Mm-hmm. Well, I
had never heard external voices before in my life. So when I heard, after just a very few ceremonies, but I had almost immediately begun to ask questions about how does this medicine work? How is it so therapeutically powerful? The colloquial saying is that one ceremony is worth 10 years of therapy. Well, I've been in therapy practice as a psychologist for over three decades, so I sort of resent that. But I do have to say the medicine is like a rocket boost to psycho-spiritual development. And so what the voice said to me very simply was, do the research. And that's how the research project got started.
Mm-hmm. Now, was it your first ayahuasca experience you had in Costa Rica?
I did, yes.
And I wasn't
looking for it. I sort of serendipitously came upon a ceremony.
Yeah.
I was actually looking for a beach vacation. It was very mundane.
Wow.
It was February in New Jersey, and I wanted, to be in the tropics. So I went to Costa Rica, and a few days before I left, one of the organizers called me and said, do you want to participate in the ceremonies? And I brilliantly said, what ceremonies? I had no idea where I was going, what was going to happen.
And you had an experience of your father's death, didn't you?
Yes, my father, I had brought him home from the hospital to put him under hospice care, and he died in my home. And that was such an intense experience. It was difficult and intense, and I felt sort of incomplete from that experience. And so when I went into my first ceremony, I asked for sort of a replay, and I actually got what I asked for. That doesn't always happen. But I had, once again, under the influence during the ceremony in my own inner world, I relived my last conversation with my father, and then I sort of traveled with him up into the cosmic universe. And so I had this mystical experience and a real sense of preparation for the dying process. So it was quite powerful for me, and I had all kinds of questions the next morning that the Ecuadorian shaman, even with a translator, they, you know, they weren't interested in my therapeutic questions. You know, that's not how they perceive the whole process and the healing. So I was in the wrong culture in a way. And so the questions that I've asked in terms of research are always, what happens after the ceremony? How are you changed? How is your life different? What are you making different decisions? What's different about you and your world? And the research was done with Westerners, with people living in North America.
And you mentioned the shaman's reaction to what you were doing. In those cultures, it's pretty much, ayahuasca is used as a treatment for pretty much run-of-the-mill things, isn't it? Things like parasites and such?
Yeah, that's pretty run-of-the-mill. Yeah, it does clean you out, so it evidently it does clean out parasites. It's also used to help people see into the jungle at night so they know telepathically, really, where the animals are, so when they go hunting the next morning, they know where to go. It's, you know, Westerners don't use it for those reasons. The Westerners, when they're asked, they basically say for psychological healing and spiritual development.
And it's not something that one takes expecting kicks and giggles. This is a violent physical process, nausea, purging being part and parcel of what goes on.
Yes, it's quite unpleasant.
Yeah.
And so it's not going to be used recreationally. It's way too challenging an experience, and you absolutely have to be very close to a bathroom. So this is not something that's going to be done casually, and it's a challenging experience for the most part.
And because of the nausea factor, it's not something you're going to get hooked on or be doing over and over, but
there's nothing addictive about it.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing that's addictive in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you drink, if you take a bigger dose than you should, basically you just vomit it up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard to keep down even just a small dose.
Yeah.
There are warnings, however, and that is if somebody is on antidepressants, they should not drink ayahuasca because there's a risk of too much serotonin being released into the system.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can be dangerous. And also there's a psychological risk. If someone has a history of psychosis or mania, it's just too high risk to enter into a ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
Very unpredictable what people will experience. And if there's any risk of a psychotic break, it's not worth it.
Mm-hmm. Now, the subtitle of the book talks about ayahuasca's use, or mentions ayahuasca's use in treating depression, addiction, PTSD, anxiety. It seems to me that the military, just to cite one example, could use this, although it's illegal, essentially. I mean,
the mix is illegal in this country, and it's listed as the other psychedelics as dangerous with no medical benefits. However, two churches originating from Brazil are using it in New Mexico and Oregon. And their cases went to the Supreme Court for their religious right to use this medicine as part of their religious sacrament. So that's a totally different way of using it. It's part of their church service, and so they have the legal right to use it.
Our guest on this Chief for Yourself is Rachel Harris, author of Listening to Ayahuasca, New Hope for Depression, Addiction, PTSD, and Anxiety. Do you think there'll be any more widespread use of ayahuasca anytime soon? Because the climate in the country doesn't seem to want to warm up to something like that.
No, it's not warming up, not exactly. I think the research there's a lot of research on psychedelics these days, but the research on ayahuasca is going to be slower because it's just difficult to get a standard dose, to actually control the dose that you're taking, or to even find something for a control group to take, because it's going to be pretty obvious who is getting the real ayahuasca and who isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a number of research challenges, and then there's a whole other level of research challenge where someone was developing a study to be done in the United States, and they had wanted to do it with authentic indigenous shamans. And so they decided the way to control the dosage and potency was to use the research ayahuasca that's being used in Spain. And that's freeze-dried the tea, and that's mm-hmm. how they controlled for the dosage. Mm-hmm. And so that adds another level of scientific control. But when they showed these capsules, these freeze-dried capsules to the shaman, the shaman said, no way, we're not going to do a ceremony with those pills. The spirit is missing. There's no spirit in those capsules.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a complicated research to begin to really get a lot of data. But there are good programs going on in Brazil and Spain mostly where they are beginning to look at the impact on depression. And also, there are people going to there are people going to South America in search of help for all of those diagnoses, including PTSD.
Mm-hmm. And it would seem logical, I guess, that you'd want to have somebody with you, especially a woman, because there have been some not-so-savory shamanic types. You'd want to have somebody with you through this process, wouldn't you? Or somebody nearby, I should say.
Well, safety is a real issue, and there have been plenty of examples of shamans taking advantage of women and actually raping them and even using what would be considered a rape drug,
mm-hmm.
where the woman kind of loses a level of consciousness and willpower. So there have been some bad stories. So the real question about safety and where you go and who you're with and what you drink, people do need to be very careful.
Listening to a show this morning on internet radio about psychedelic drugs, experiences, and things like that, and their use in therapy, a lot of the word mystical being bounced around, but you tend to like, at least at some point in the process, you like the word spiritual better than mystical. Why is that?
Well, the research team at Johns Hopkins has found a research definition for what they call a complete mystical experience. And they're working to really define the best dose of psilocybin to reach that mystical experience. And they're seeing that as the critical therapeutic variable. With ayahuasca, people do have mystical experiences, but it is so widely unpredictable. And they can have completely different experiences besides a mystical or spiritual one. But the range is much greater and far more unpredictable with ayahuasca than with the other psychedelics. And so people can re-experience childhood traumas or childhood happy birthday parties. I mean, you really don't know what's going to happen in a way.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was sort of so surprised that I actually received the experience I asked for regarding my dad's death. But it could be a wide range of experiences. Somebody reached me the other day who wanted to talk about her experience of becoming a jaguar. She shapeshifted during the ceremony and really experienced herself as a jaguar. And what did this mean? And she was just flabbergasted by the experience. So we don't really know what's going to happen. But many people... The one common thing is people sort of report different versions of feeling purified in some way, and not just from the vomiting or the cleaning out of their intestinal tract. There's a sense of inner healing an inner clearing out of negative energy of some way or dark energy, that they feel refreshed the next morning and they feel better than usual.
Mm-hmm.
Weller than well is, it would be the correct phrase.
Yeah.
So there is that pattern of an experience of healing. People don't always know right away what it means, but often they talk about there was some sort of polishing and cleaning of my heart center, or I feel more heart-centered, more open to love and loving kindness toward themselves and others. So there are themes that happen frequently.
Mm-hmm. In your experience and in your practice, you are a psychologist. Is there a point where you look at someone's situation and you think it would be wise for them to move from the usual therapy to an ayahuasca experience? Can you see that in someone?
You know, I don't look to see that. This is a very powerful psychedelic, and people have to sort of feel called. They have to yearn for this experience for some reason. So it has to come from within them. It's too powerful an experience for me to say, this would be good for you.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't go there. It has to come from within them. And I just do want to point out that I'm no longer in private practice, so I would never recommend this to anybody. But people do say, well, I've had a dream about ayahuasca, or I've been hearing about this medicine for years, and I'm almost ready. There is that sense. But in the same way, someone just said to me, yes, my husband has worked with plant medicines, but I don't think they're for me.
Yeah.
And I respect that very much. There's kind of an inner intuitive knowing.
There was a quote in the book about someone who was quoted as saying the cause of all illness is spiritual. And I really like that quote. I'm wondering, do you see the cause, really the root cause of all illness, as being spiritual?
You know, that's how the shamans see it. They see illness as a manifestation of a spiritual problem. I'm too much of a Western psychologist to say that. But, you know, there is a movement even within psychiatry regarding all the diagnoses in the DSM now 5, it's in the fifth edition, is that most of the illnesses relate back to childhood trauma of one kind or another. And it could be a mild trauma of not being loved enough or not being cared for enough or not a secure enough attachment to a parent. And it could be one of these really dramatic, violent traumas that the person barely lives through. But many psychiatric diagnoses are really based on previous experiences of trauma. And that may not include the ones that are so clearly biochemical, like bipolar or schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But many of the diagnoses relate to childhood experiences. But I'm not a shaman. I don't see the world in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an alternative, valid way of seeing the world, and that is how they see it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the other side of it is people ask, well, you know, can it cure cancer? And there are beginning to be testimonials of it cured me of one thing or another. But there's one report that this one woman gave. She'd been diagnosed in a Western setting with ovarian cancer. And she hoped that she could go to an ayahuasca ceremony and be cured. And during that ceremony, she heard a voice from ayahuasca, and ayahuasca said, go get the surgery.
Mm.
You know, it's sort of like a wise grandmother, come on, go get the surgery. And so, of course, she did. She took the advice and had the surgery, and that basically saved her life, and she's healthy. But do we count that as a cure? Or did ayahuasca cure her? Well,
yeah.
In a way, it did. It certainly contributed. So there are different ways of looking at things. But had she not had the surgery, no matter what happened spiritually, she could very well have not survived.
Mm-hmm. since ayahuasca contains natural ingredients, it isn't something that lends itself well to patenting. And yet I have to think the pharmaceutical industry not real enthused about this practice. Are you seeing big pharma working against the use of ayahuasca?
Well, you know, it's sort of the same thing happened with marijuana. They've figured out a way to isolate some of the healing properties of marijuana without the psychological effect. So I think the same thing will eventually happen with ayahuasca as well. But it's going to be decades, I think, before. There is some beginning research, but really not, you know, just the very tiny beginning, looking at harmine, which is a chemical in the ayahuasca vine itself. It doesn't even have to be combined with a chacruna plant. And they're looking at that as being helpful for neurodegenerative diseases. But the research is at the very, very beginning stages. So we have a long way to go.
As I read the book, I kept thinking of the word mindfulness. It seemed to me that ayahuasca is a tool, I think you said supercharge. It seems to supercharge your ability to reach mindfulness and thus make better decisions. Am I anywhere near accurate on that?
Well, you know, there's actually scientific evidence that points in that direction for all of the psychedelic medicines, and that is that when they put someone into a functional MRI machine, their default mode network receives less oxygen, so it's less active. And that's not an anatomical part of the brain. It's a literal network throughout the brain. And that's the part of the brain that is sort of a running commentary on everything. It would include our inner critic and our to-do lists and all our ruminations. And that running commentary takes up about 60% of our time. I mean, it's an enormous amount of our life is spent in this kind of rumination and machine-like thinking. Mm-hmm. And it all supports our sense of self in the sense of an ego self. It supports the way we see the world and how we are in the world and who we think we are. And the psychedelic medicines reduce that activity, and so does mindfulness meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very interesting. So it opens up space
yeah.
for new connections to be made neurologically in mm-hmm. the brain. And so there really is a transformative quality in both these approaches.
Mm-hmm. That was my takeaway, and I'll ask you now for our final question. What would you like to see the reader come away with after reading this book?
Well, you know, my intention for the book was really for it to be helpful to people therapeutically. I've spent my life as a therapist. I want to continue to be helpful therapeutically for people before they enter into working with ayahuasca in a ceremony, or after. The period after a ceremony is a golden opportunity for therapeutic work. And so there are lots of examples in the book about how people can reflect on their experience and work on their own personal histories. And I want the book to serve as kind of a template for therapists to begin to learn how to work with people who are working with these altered states of consciousness.
And where would we find your website?
Oh, the website is the name of the book, listeningtoayahuasca.com.
Okay, great. All right, the book, as Rachel mentioned, Listening to Ayahuasca, New Hope for Depression, Addiction, PTSD, and Anxiety, from our guest, Dr. Rachel Harris. Rachel, thanks for being with us today and sharing your extensive work into ayahuasca and its many possibilities, and I hope you come back and talk with us again at some point.
Thank you so much. I'd love to.
As usual, you'll see a link to our guest's website on the chiefforyourself.com start page. The show will also be available as a downloadable podcast at Blog Talk Radio, Podomatic, Blueberry, and a number of other hosting sites, too. Chief for Yourself can be accessed at iHeart.com under the podcast heading. more great guests are being lined up for you, and some new freebies are coming your way, too. The best way of keeping up with that and with all the guest information and other show details is through Genuline's blog posts. You can subscribe by leaving your email address in the box at the top of the ChiefForYourself.com start page. Well, that is all for this day. I want to thank you so much for being with us and for all of your follows and other support, too. Be well, and I will talk to you soon.